From Quality Radio Productions, it's another edition of the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age, and occasionally some more contemporary radio drama as well. I'm Jake Longwell, and I put that extra wording in the introduction because we'll open today's program with something considerably more recent. It's still classic radio, as it was recorded almost 40 years ago now. We have an episode of a BBC radio series from 1980. The series Haunted, Stories of the Supernatural. Although the series was a British production, this particular story is set in America. Originally broadcast on June 28th, 1980, the episode What Was It?
We present Haunted, Stories of the Supernatural. What Was It? By Fitzjames O'Brien. Adapted for radio by Derek Hottinott. Starring Peter Marinka as Harry, Blaine Fairman as Hammond, and Helen Horton as Mrs. Moffat. Haunted.
It is, I confess, with considerable diffidence that I approach this strange narrative. The events which I purpose detailing are so extraordinary in character that I am quite prepared to meet with an unusual amount of incredulity and scorn. Having said that, I wish now to relate some facts which came to pass July last, in the year 1854, and which, in the annals of the mysteries of physical science, are wholly unparalleled. I had just arrived at number 28, 26th Street, New York City, a large rambling house previously owned by a Mr. Arbuthnot, a well-known New York merchant who became the center of a gigantic financial swindle and who, as a result, committed suicide abroad. The house, after remaining empty for years, gained a reputation for being haunted, but this did not deter a certain Mrs. Moffat from turning it into a reputable boarding house.
No, Mr. Crown. Neither I nor my guests believe all the stories put about by the neighbors.
In fact, Mr. Crown, when Mrs. Moffat challenged us to follow her here, we couldn't wait to accept.
Dr. Hammond here was at my previous abode. I owned a smaller boarding house some two blocks away. But when I heard that this property was for sale, well, at a reasonable cost, now I felt I had to jump at such a bargain, despite its reputation.
Pray tell me, Mrs. Moffat, what stories were circulating about the house?
Oh, strange noises and the like. The caretaker and his wife, who were looking after the property during those 3 years, spoke of furniture being moved, of unseen steps on the stairs in broad daylight. The rustle of silk dresses, the usual things.
And what happened to the caretakers?
Oh, the estate agent dismissed them. That's right, isn't it, Mrs. Moffat?
Well, he had no hope of selling the property while they were spreading such morbid tales. He had to get rid of them.
Then, when Mrs. Moffat was telling us that this house would be ideal for expanding her business, and that the accommodation would be much better, we, her guests, that is, were unanimous in taking up the challenge of the unknown and joining her.
Naturally, Mr. Crown, I had to consult my guests, because they too must have heard the stories about the house. I couldn't afford to lose such respected clientele if they felt, well, any qualms about the possibilities of specters appearing at the foot of their beds in the dead of night.
And we were proved right. For since moving here, nothing has happened.
Nothing at all?
Well,
something has, then.
There is an explanation, as I pointed out to Dr. Hammond.
What was it?
It happened in my bedroom as I was washing before going to bed. Mm-hmm. The candle suddenly went out.
A window was open. A breeze.
The window was not open. And if it had been, the night, I recall, was still. I'm sure there is an explanation, but...
You haven't found one?
Not as yet, no.
It's an overactive mind caused by all that reading, Doctor.
You're probably right, Mrs. Moffat. All of us have read up on supernaturalism, psychic research, and...
What's the matter?
Harold Crown, you said?
Yeah.
Are you the author of the history of supernaturalism that I've just read?
For my sins, yes, I am.
Well, good Lord, Mrs. Moffat, we have an author in our midst. And not only an author, but a specialist in spirits, an expert in ghosts.
I wouldn't call myself an expert.
Tell me, Mr. Crown.
Yes, Mrs. Moffat?
What brought you to my establishment? How did you hear of its existence?
From a friend.
He stayed here then?
No, he'd heard the rumors, that's all. He had a house, the garden of which backed onto yours. Naturally, he could not help but hear the gossip.
Oh, I see. But you do have business in New York.
You see what Mrs. Moffat is doing, don't you, Crown?
What's that?
She's trying to find out the real reason for your coming here. Business or merely ghost hunting? I suggest we move into the dining room. I think tea is going to be particularly interesting. Oh. I can't wait to introduce Mr. Crown to them. I believe he's come here for one thing only. To try and catch our ghost.
It was only after a month of psychological excitement that it was with the utmost dissatisfaction that I was forced, like my fellow boarders, to admit that nothing in the remotest degree approaching the supernatural manifested itself. I suppose I should have left there and then, for Mrs. Moffat and Dr. Hammond were right. I had come to the house in order to seek out the strange happenings which had been reported to me. But I struck up a great and deep friendship with Dr. Hammond, whom I discovered had a secret vice, the same as mine, in fact. It was a discovery I made as I smoked my pipe in the garden one evening after dinner.
Harry, forgive me for asking.
Yes, Stephen? What is it?
I thought so.
What's the matter?
My friend, we share a common interest. I wasn't sure at first, but now... You smoke opium.
Well, yes. Yes, I do. But please, don't mention it to Mrs. Moffat. I don't think she... My dear Stephen, you don't mean...
Regularly. Usually alone in my room, or when I'm outside, walking in the streets or parks. This is wonderful, Harry.
I've smoked it for some time now.
So have I, at least 2 years.
That's marvelous.
My dear friend, do not leave this house without us smoking at least once together. We can share our experience. I would find it scientifically interesting to see whether its effects are the same on 2 different individuals, or whether its effects are common to all, irrespective of mental and physical abilities. What do you say?
I would be happy to, my dear friend.
We enjoyed together those wonderful moments when our thoughts expanded, our perceptive facilities intensified, and when our bounds of existence exploded, so that we were able to touch all points of the universe. But the hours which the doctor and I spent together were regulated with scientific accuracy. We did not blindly smoke the drug of paradise and leave our dreams to chance. We talked calmly, steering our conversation through the brightest and calmest channels of thought. We talked of art, poetry, and literature. When we spoke of Shakespeare's Tempest, we lingered over Ariel, never Caliban. Until one evening, when we had talked some time upon the mysticism and the almost universal love of the terrible,
Stephen Hammond suddenly said to me,
Harry, what do you consider to be the greatest element of terror?
What do you mean, my dear friend?
Come, come, Harry. Surely the question is a simple one.
Well, there are many things that would frighten me, terrify me. Stumbling over a corpse in the dark, beholding, as I once did, a woman floating down a deep and rapid river with wildly lifted arms and awful upturned face, shrieking in fear as she died in the freezing waters. I must say, Stephen, I've never considered the subject before. I cannot therefore attempt even the most vague definition.
Well, I am somewhat like you, Harry. I feel my capacity to experience a terror greater than anything yet conceived by the human mind. Something combining in fearful and unnatural amalgamation hitherto supposed incompatible elements.
Look, I think we should stop talking like this. We shall suffer for it, depend on it.
I don't know what's the matter with me tonight, but my brain is running upon all sorts of weird and awful thoughts.
I'm off to bed. Opium and nightmares should never be brought together. How sultry it is anyway. Good night, Stephen.
Good night, Harry. Pleasant dreams to you.
To you, gloomy wretch. Visions of ghouls and enchanters.
We parted, and each went to his respective chamber. I undressed and got into bed. I resolved to go to sleep, turned down my gas lamp so that only a little blue point of light glimmered at the top of the tube. I composed myself to rest. And then, dear God, even recalling the incident now makes me shudder and recoil. Something awful happened.
Oh, my God! What's that? Get off me! For God's sakes, what's happening?
Let me go! For God's sake, let me go! I can't!
The light! I must turn off the light!
My throat! Take your hands from my throat! I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
Oh, my God! Leave me alone! Where are you? Where are you? I can't see. Dear God, I cannot see. I can hear you, but I can't see you.
Take your hands off me. Let go of me. Help. Help. Assassin. Please, someone. I've got you. I've got you. Now, stay still. Stay absolutely still while I turn the light up.
I shudder now as I think of that terrifying moment. For I saw nothing. I had one arm firmly clasped round a breathing, panting, corporeal shape. My other hand gripped with all its strength a throat as warm and apparently fleshy as my own. And yet, with this living substance in my grasp, with its body pressed against my own, and the bright glare of a large jet of gas, I beheld absolutely nothing. Not even an outline. A vapor.
My God! Harry, what's going on in here?
Stephen, help me!
Harry? What's happened? What are you doing?
Please, come closer. For God's sakes, come closer. Oh, I can hold this thing down only a short time longer.
What?
Hold its arm down. There. Its arm is there. It's gradually overpowering me. Help me, for God's sake, help me.
Harry, there's nothing there. You've been smoking too much opium.
I swear to you, Stephen, this is no vision. Don't you see how my whole body shakes as it struggles beneath me? Please, Stephen, if you're not convinced, feel it, Harry. Touch it.
Harry, please, there is nothing there.
Can't you hear it? Breathe. Listen.
Harry, please.
Listen, damn you.
Harry, you'll have Mrs. Moffat.
Listen.
That's you.
Oh, touch it. Feel it. Go on, Stephen. Do as I say. Feel its arm. Huh? There, its head. Go on.
All right. All right. Oh, my God.
You felt it? Flesh and bone, sinew and blood.
Oh my God, Harry, what is it?
In the cupboard, man. Over there. A length of cord. Huh? I cannot hold him much longer. We'll tie him up with a cord.
But there's nothing there. We
get the cord, for God's sake, before he gets free again.
I've got the cord, Harry.
Well, go on. Tie him up. Tie the thing or whatever it is up.
Very well.
His hands are there. Tie them first. Hurry. I'm weakening.
Yes. I can feel the hands. God, hurry. We ought to get help. Harry.
Now the other hand. Please, Stephen, hurry.
What are you going to do?
Now, pull the hands together. Uh-huh. Then we'll tie the feet. He nearly got free then. Quickly, Stephen, tie the feet together.
I feel sick. Harry, I'm going to be sick to touch something and not...
Do it, Stephen, for heaven's sakes, man. Just do it.
All right, Harry. You may let go of the thing can't move.
It's all right, Stephen.
No. It's the opium. It affected both of us. We took too much.
No, it isn't that. It exists.
How can a living, a solid living body be invisible?
I don't know, my friend. Now it is bound and cannot hurt us. I propose to find out.
But
Stephen!
What?
There is something there. See? The indentation on the sheet. It moves and struggles with the ropes.
I cannot watch.
My friend, you are witnessing a miracle. Don't you realize? The first visible signs of a being from another world. A world we know nothing of that has shape and form like us, but we cannot see.
You say it. Like us? But how do you know?
I don't know, of course. Look, let us sit down and think this out.
Stephen,
I need your help. You're a doctor. Your views could be useful to me. We've got over the first shock. Now, it's time to use our heads to think what to do. What scientific value we can expose to the world.
You don't intend to tell.
Nothing like this has occurred since the birth of the world. I know not what to think at this precise moment. Oh, God grant that I am not mad and that this is not some insane fantasy.
All right, Harry. Now, let us reason a little.
Good man.
Here is a solid body which we touch, but which we cannot see.
Yes.
Now, the fact is so unusual that it strikes us with terror. Is there no parallel for such a phenomenon? Take a piece of pure glass. It is tangible but transparent. A certain chemical coarseness is all that prevents its being entirely transparent as to be totally invisible. We do not see the air, but we breathe it. Feel it.
That's all very well, Stephen, but these are inanimate substances. Glass does not breathe. Air does not breathe. This thing has a heart that palpitates, a will that moves it, lungs that play and inspire and respire. Listen. You hear it breathe? It sleeps.
Oh, but you forget. You forget the phenomena of which we have heard so often of late. At the meetings called spirit circles, invisible hands have been thrust into the hands of those persons round the table. Warm, fleshy hands that seem to pulsate with normal life.
Then, like me, you think that this thing is...
I don't know what it is. But please the gods, I will, with your assistance,
thoroughly investigate it.
As far as I can make out by touch, it has a human shape. There is a mouth, a round, smooth head, without hair. There is one thing, Stephen.
What?
His hands.
What about them?
Well, they seem to be that of a boy's.
What are we going to do, Harry? Tomorrow morning, when the house is astir, when Mrs. Moffat has the rooms clean. We can't leave it here. It's asleep now, but tomorrow when it wakes up...
We shall have to pretend that I'm ill. Gone down with a fever. You can say that you think it ill-advised for anyone to enter the room for the time being, apart from yourself.
Stephen, I've just had a marvelous idea.
What?
A setting of plaster.
What are you talking about?
By covering it with a setting of plaster, we shall be able to determine its form.
That's all right if it remains still, Harry, but look how it struggled with you. Look at the strength it contains. The plaster would never set.
Oh, then we have to find a way of keeping it still. Tying it down doesn't totally prevent movement.
Chloroform.
That's a good idea.
If it'll work.
Oh, why shouldn't it? If he has the same senses, feeling as a human being, why not, Stephen?
We ought to tell Mrs. Moffat. The others have a right to know.
When we have the answers, Stephen. Now look. Tomorrow morning, you tell them I'm ill, and it will be necessary for you to remain in my room all day in order to keep my fever down. Now bring the chloroform and plaster. Tomorrow, we'll know. We'll know what lies there. And then... Only then can we truly explain to the world what we have discovered. And so it was. All day we worked silently in my bedroom so that Mrs. Moffat would not suspect. The lie having been communicated to the rest of the guests, Dr. Hammond returned to my room with the chloroform and the plaster. By this time the thing had woken up. It struggled at its fetters, breathing deeply and angrily. We chloroformed it. And within minutes it fell silent. We managed to undo the rope, and then, carefully, slowly we covered it in the plaster. Never was anything revealed that was so horrible. So, even now I feel sick at the thought of it. It was shaped like a man. Distorted, uncouth, and horrible, but still a man. It was small, not over 4 feet high, and its limbs revealed development that was unparalleled. It had the physiognomy of what I should fancy a ghoul might be. It looked as if it were capable of feeding on human flesh.
My God.
I know.
I wish we'd never started on this.
We cannot let the others see it or know of its existence.
But what do we do? It lives. It breathes. And now we can see it too. I can barely remain in this room.
Don't desert me now, Stephen. Please, don't desert me.
What do we do?
We have to make our discovery public.
No. Think what might happen to us. Having gone this far, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that we might become outcast by society in the belief that we might possess some hidden powers, that we're even practicing some form of black magic. Oh, no. No, it is too dangerous.
Stephen, help me.
It's moving violently. More chloroform. The blast is breaking.
Chloroform, quick.
Several days passed. The most distressing part of the affair was that we were entirely ignorant of what the creature habitually fed on. Everything in the way of nutriment that we could think of was placed before it, but was never touched. It was awful to stand by and hear the hard breathing and know that it was becoming hungrier, hungrier, weaker and weaker. Finally, on the 10th day, he died. The thing died at 2:30 exactly, and the sudden silence in my room was deafening. Ready?
Yes. If anyone should be watching...
What?
Seeing us bury an imaginary body, they think us truly mad.
I'm keeping the plaster cast as scientific evidence.
No one will believe you.
I'll have to risk it. Come on, let's fill it in.
What's the matter now?
I was just thinking. I sat there last night in my room and watched it die. I actually sat there and watched another human being die.
Human?
Well, Stephen, if it wasn't human, what was it?
Was What Was It? By Fitzjames O'Brien, starring Peter Marinka as Harry, Blaine Fairman as Hammond, and Helen Horton as Mrs. Moffat. Haunted was adapted and directed by Derek Hodinott.
An episode of the BBC radio series Haunted, Stories of the Supernatural. What Was It? From June 28th, 1980. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. The address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And if you want more information about the radio theater, such as detailed program listings, or if you want to listen to this and previous episodes of the series at your convenience, then you'll want to visit our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is show number 1623. We'll turn to a program from the Golden Age of Radio to wrap up the hour. In fact, a children's western series, Straight Arrow. Up until the early 1950s, with the debut of such programs as Gunsmoke and The Six Shooter, most, if not all, radio westerns were aimed at younger audiences. Straight Arrow was, in reality, Steve Adams, a Comanche Indian raised by white ranchers. He fought to preserve law and order and to right wrongs for both Native Americans and whites in the Old West. We don't have a specific date for this syndicated broadcast, the series sponsored by Nabisco Foods, but we do know that it was released for syndication sometime during the year 1948. The episode, Land of Our Fathers.
Nabisco, Nabisco is the name to know. For a breakfast you can't beat, try Nabisco shredded wheat. Keen eyes fixed on a flying target. A gleaming arrow set against a rawhide string. A strong bow bent almost to the breaking point. And then... Great Arrow! Nabisco Shredded Wheat presents Straight Arrow, a new thrilling adventure story from the exciting days of the Old West. To friends and neighbors alike, Steve Adams appeared to be nothing more than the young owner of the Broken Bow cattle spread. But when danger threatened innocent people, and when evildoers plotted against justice, then Steve Adams' rancher disappeared. And in his place came a mysterious, stalwart Indian, wearing the dress and war paint of a Comanche, riding the great golden Palomino Fury. Galloping out of the darkness to take up the cause of law and order throughout the West comes the legendary figure of Straight Arrow. With the westward expansion of the United States came many settlers who were good people and learned to live in peace with the Indians of the prairie country. But as more and more covered wagons rolled along the trails, the search for land grew feverish. And there were some who turned evil eyes on the land where stood the teepees and the council fires of the Comanche.
Oh, there. Look at this, Spur. Plenty of land for us to grab off.
Yeah, good land, too. We can sell it for plenty to folks coming west. Only it's Injun land, Marty.
What if it is? We'll grab it off right under their noses.
How? We ain't strong enough to fight all them red men.
We ain't, Spur. But supposing all the settlers around here started into fight.
Fight the Injuns? Well, they won't. They're peaceful.
Yeah. Oh, but they won't be long. I got a scheme, Spur. A scheme that's going to bust this Injun territory wide open. Come on. Get it. Oh, there you go.
A few nights later, Monty and Spur gathered with a group of desperados in a tangle of brush not far from the homes of several settlers.
All right, all of you. Stop gabbing and listen. Now, we sweep down on them houses and put them to the torch. Steal the horses, scatter the cattle. Just make sure of one thing.
What's that, Monty?
I want them settlers to put the blame right on the Injuns, not on us. That's why I had you all decked out in war paint and deerskin.
One thing we ain't got, Monty. Them Comanches all wear red feather headbands.
All right. We can't get them headbands. Only the Injuns know where to get them eagle feathers. But it's dark, savvy? Nobody will notice. Now, here we go. And yell. Yell just like Comanche.
It took rugged people to survive in pioneer days. It was all work, hard work that called for hearty food. Makes you wonder how men like that fabulous redskin Straight Arrow can keep up his fast pace of danger and excitement. It takes plenty of energy to keep going like that. The pushing, driving energy you can get from Nabisco Shredded Wheat. Try a bowl full of these crisp cereal biscuits whenever you need extra energy. Nabisco Shredded Wheat is so delicious, you'll be looking for that wholesome, healthful cereal every day. Remember to get the original Niagara Falls package of Nabisco Shredded Wheat. Monty and his gang, dressed as Indians, made one night raid after another. Outlying settlers living near Comanche territory awoke night after night to hear the thunder of hoofs, the hiss of arrows, and the crash of rifle bullets, and the crackle of flames as raiding parties burnt down their homes.
Now,
Packy, that just doesn't make sense. You and I know the Comanches are at peace. They have a treaty. They'd never violate a treaty.
Steve, I just now come from El Camino. The town's boiling over. Folks say there's been 4 raiding parties in the past week alone.
Can't believe it.
Kino, I know, Steve. After all, you was born a Comanche yourself. But wait, you ain't heard the worst of it. Why, there's talk about taking that land away from them Comanches.
What's that?
Folks is roused up, Steve. They're calling a meeting. They've even got a big judge sent out special from Washington.
In El Camino, partner?
Got there just last night.
Federal judge, huh? Come on, partner. Let's head for El Camino. I aim to have words with that judge. Get up there.
Get up there, paint horse. Come on, baby.
Judge Prentice was just having breakfast in the El Camino Cafe when Steve Adams and Packy located him. Steve got down to business immediately.
That's right, Judge Prentice. My handle's Adams. Steve Adams, owner of the Broken Bow Cattle Spring.
And I'm his sidekick, Packy.
Well, sit down and join me, gentlemen.
If you don't mind, Judge, I'd rather stick to talk. Judge, the Comanches are innocent.
Huh?
I'm certain all this talk about Indian raids is just talk.
Hold on there, mister. So you figure them redskins ain't harm folks none, do you? Ha. You hear that, Spur?
Yeah, Marty.
We were having a private confab with Judge Prentice. You weren't asked to horn in.
We're doing it on our own hook then, stranger. And what you're trying to say is a dead blamed lie.
Why, you dead blamed buzzard. You can't call
Steady,
Steve
partner.
Adams.
I'll handle this.
But Steve...
Gentlemen, gentlemen, I didn't come here to witness gunplay. I came to solve a difficult problem. Yeah, Judge. And it was me and Spur here sent for you.
Well, now that's mighty interesting. I suppose it was your place that was raided.
No, not exactly.
Or this Spur gents, maybe.
No, not me neither.
Just what is your stake, then? You wouldn't be land agents now, would you?
Suppose we are.
Just wondering, mister. If that land is taken away from the Comanches and thrown open to settlers, you can make plenty of cash selling it, can't you?
No, look at here. I've taken enough left
for
you.
One moment, please. Mr. Adams.
Yes, Judge?
As representative of the law, I take no sides. I'm here to learn for myself who is right. But I tell you this. There have been Indian raids already, many of them. I've already spoken to dozens of settlers whose homes have been leveled to the ground, whose cattle and horses have been scattered to the winds. Adams, I'm very much afraid that the Comanches must be punished.
Yeah, they burned out my home.
I come to speak to my white brother.
Steve, my cactus, it's a red man.
A Comanche, walking right in here bold as brass.
I am White Cloud of the Comanche. Word has come that we violated our pledge of peace. This is not so. We keep the peace.
He's lying.
White Cloud does not lie. I swear.
The sneaking buzzard, grab him, gents. String him up.
Gentlemen, gentlemen.
Stand back. All of you, stand back.
Get out of the way, Adams. Get out of the way.
Look out.
Now, the next man that goes for his gun like Monty will be mighty sorry. White Cloud, back, out the door.
I am not afraid.
Do as I say. Packy and me will come along with you. Now, don't move, anybody. All of you stand still.
I got the door, Steve.
All right, out. Run for the horses. Go back to your people, White Cloud. These settlers are madder than hornets.
My people have not broken the peace.
White Cloud, this is no time for making talk. Vamoose, pronto.
Very well. I go. But this I tell to you. We will not give up our land. We will never give up our land.
Packy, into the saddle. We can't argue with him, partner. Into the saddle and ride. Pronto.
Get up there. Steve, we gotta do something. If the Comanches didn't break the peace, who did?
Packy, that's what we gotta find out. There's just one way to do it. Follow me, partner. We're heading for Sundown Valley in the cave of a straight arrow.
Mysterious valley, a hidden cave known only to Steve Adams and Packy. Its walls glitter with gold, and in the cave stands the great golden Palomino Fury.
Easy there, Fury. Now, out of these clothes.
A Comanche bow and arrows hang on the wall. There is Comanche war paint, Comanche garb. In a moment, Steve Adams' rancher is gone, and in his place...
Steady, Fury. It is I, Straight Arrow.
A clatter of hoops in the mass open cave. An Indian war whoop that rings from the glittering rock. Out into the open gallops the great golden Palomino Fury. And riding bareback, clad in Indian garb from head to toe, Straight Arrow on the trail of justice.
Packy, my friend, ride with me. We go to the council fire of the Comanche.
Get up there! Hey,
Kaniwa! Jury!
After leaving El Camino, White Cloud had galloped back to the Comanche village and called a council of Indian braves. He told them what had taken place, and as he finished, the faces of his fellow warriors grew fierce and troubled.
No! They will never take our land! Never! Is that not so, warriors of the Comanche? We will fight to keep our land!
We cannot fight! We have smoked the pipe of peace.
It is not we who break the peace. It will be they. Let the peace pipe be broken and cast to the four winds. This is our land, the land of our fathers. We shall...
Kahari! Look, my brothers.
A Comanche in war paint. A bow and arrows that glitter with gold. And he wears the red feather headband.
It is Straight Arrow. House!
Oh, Fury, oh! House, the honey! House, Straight Arrow!
Straight Arrow, we have heard of you, and now you come.
When my brothers, the Comanche, are in danger, Straight Arrow shall always come.
Even so, Straight Arrow, much danger. This land...
Already I know of this, White Cloud.
You know?
Brothers of the Red Feather Headband, listen to me. Let your war paint stay in the teepee. Let not the war cry be heard on your lips.
Straight Arrow, what shall we do then? Take down our teepees? Bury our council fires? Shall we move our squaws, our children, from this our land?
No. No, White Cloud. Do you not trust Straight Arrow?
Yes, but...
Then do as I say. It is not you who raid the homes of the settlers.
Who then, Straight Arrow? Who has done this?
I do not yet know. But the judge who comes from Washington, from the home of the great White Father, will not decide for a few more days. And before then, I shall find out, O brothers of the Red Feather Headband. I shall find out. Manitoua!
Manitoua!
Up, Palomino! Up, Curie!
Sweeping out of the Indian village, the red man rejoined Packy, who had been waiting out on the prairie. A signal from Straight Arrow, and the two men rode on into the dusk. But that night in El Camino...
Marty, we gotta do something, I tell you. I've been listening to that Judge Prentice. He's too blamed honest.
I don't savvy, Spare. What's eating you?
He still ain't convinced the Comanche's been pulling them raids. He plans to hold a regular hearing to ask the Comanche themselves to show up.
But what's that? Why, that'll bust our scheme wide open. Spur, we gotta do something that'll make that judge dead set against them Injuns, savvy.
Yeah, Marty, but what?
Eddie. Hey. He ain't staying in town, is he?
No, he ain't. He's going over to Carson's ranch. He's staying there the rest of the week.
Carson's place, huh?
You got something up your sleeve, Monty?
Yes, Spur, I sure enough have. Spur, there's one way to make up Judge Prentice's mind. Suppose, just suppose that Injuns was to raid Carson's place right while he was there.
Injuns? You mean us, Monty?
Yes, I mean us. Round up the gang, Spur. We gotta figure this out pronto.
Did you ever see the equal of Spur and Monty for pure meanness? They're so set on stirring up redskin trouble and putting the blame on White Cloud's tribe that they'll even raid the ranch where Judge Prentice is staying. This setup calls for Straight Arrow and quick, just as a really good breakfast calls for Nabisco Shredded Wheat, the tempting whole grain cereal that seems to be just everybody's favorite. You just try some. And when you taste that golden whole wheat flavor, you'll be sold on Nabisco Shredded Wheat from then on. And that'll be fine and dandy, because Nabisco Shredded Wheat is yours for good health. A healthful, energy-giving cereal that's bound to give you a good morning start. Have Nabisco Shredded Wheat, the original shredded wheat, tomorrow. Monty and Spur, two unscrupulous land grabbers, fake a series of Indian raids on outlying settlers in order to have a federal judge take land away from the Comanche and open it for settlement. But Straight Arrow, certain that the Comanche are keeping the peace, takes up the chase. Knowing the federal judge to be an honest man who will countenance no wrongdoing, the red man prevails on White Cloud's tribe to leave matters in his hands. And that night, after traveling from the Indian village, he and his partner Packy arrive in the town of El Camino.
Oh!
Streets are plenty deserted, Straight Arrow.
Yes, but look there, Packy. The hitching rail in front of the cafe.
I don't notice nothing out of line.
So many horses, my friend. And look now, yet another one stops before the cafe.
Well, why shouldn't they be there? If they're going into the cafe...
The cafe is dark.
Huh?
No light shines from the window.
My cactus, that's so. It's closed up tighter than a drum.
And watch. That rider has dismounted. Does he enter the cafe?
Why, no. No, he ain't. He's heading up the outside stairs to the balcony.
Watch him.
Well, hog tie me for a blister. Kino, Straight Arrow. He went into a room up there, a lighted room.
Yes. And for a moment when the door was open, I saw many others already inside. And speaking to them was Monty.
Monty?
When you and I were in El Camino this morning. You do not recall?
Monty? By cactus, now I do. Yeah. He's one of them there land grabbers.
He and another called Spur.
I grab Kino, Monty and Spur.
Packy, others can go up on that balcony also to listen and hear while these bad men talk. Fury, under the balcony.
Yeah, under Pink.
Leaving Fury and Paint in the shadow of the cafe balcony, Straight Arrow led the way up the worn wooden stairs and toward the door through which came the murmur of voices.
Softly, Packy, if they hear us.
Kino, I'll be careful.
Closer now.
Quickly, red man and white moved across the balcony. Lamplight gleamed through the cracks of a closed door, and soon they could hear Monty's voice.
All right, then, gents, it's all settled. We'll put on a good act for that Judge Prentice. So good he'll order the Comanche land thrown wide open.
What do we ride out, Monty?
What's wrong with it right now? We'll head out of town, change the engine, pull the warp eight. What was that?
Hey, Straight Arrow. My gun. It bumped up against the door.
Quiet, Packy. Perhaps they will pay no heed to it.
Come on, Monty.
Yeah, hands to the balcony. I wonder.
There ain't nobody out there.
Maybe not, but I need to find out.
Who's out there? Who is
it? Oh. Oh. Biggie jumped quickly over the railing.
Oh, what's the blaze?
Monty, what happened?
I don't know. Something hit me out of
there. There ain't nobody out here now.
There was, I tell you. There must have been a...
Hey!
There they go. Look at them. Head the horses right under the balcony. Slug me and jump.
Well, we'll get them.
Never mind that. Don't be loco and waste lead. They're gone. Slanted around the corner.
Who was they, Monty? How much did they hear?
I don't know, and we ain't waiting to find out, Chevy. We're hitting the trail pronto.
For Carson's place?
Yeah, to stage our engine raid. And the faster we get there, the better. Come on, gents. Get to your horses.
Yeah, all right. Come on, boys, up
there. Meanwhile, Straight Arrow galloped Fury full tilt around behind the El Camino General Store. There he halted, and while his partner Packy gaped in amazement, the red man vanished into the dark store to reappear in a moment with a heavy sack slung over one strong shoulder.
Hey, what in tarnation, Straight Arrow? What's that?
Here, Packy, on your horse, Paint, behind his saddle. Do not move, Paint. No, I tie it on firmly.
Well, I don't savvy. What in blazes do we want with that? It's them polecats of Marty's and Spurs that we're going after. Why, they... Hey! Hey, there they go now, hightailing out of town.
Steady, Fury. After them, Packy.
Yeah, but we don't even know where they're heading.
They will stop for a while to get into Indian dress. You must trail them while I go to the Comanche village.
You mean you're getting White Cloud?
White Cloud and his braves. When Monty and his men stage that raid, Judge Prentice shall see the difference between real Indians and false.
Kino, I'll trail after Monty right enough. But how in blazes will you find
me? I shall find you. Now, up, Fury.
Hey, but stay here. He's gone. It's dark. Plum dark. Even with the moon, how's he going to pick up my trail? But he said I should tag after Monty no matter what. Keno, then. Come on, Paint Horse. Wherever them ornery coyotes are heading, we're going after them. Get up there!
The moon laid a silver blanket over the wigwams and teepees of the Indian village as Straight Arrow's Great Horse Fury flashed over the dark prairie and down among the tethered horses in the buffalo hide lodgings. But the village dogs raised the alarm, and in a few short seconds, every brave in the village was clustered around the giant Palomino and his famous rider.
Ho, Chewy, ho, ho. Straight Arrow. It is Straight Arrow.
Straight Arrow. What is it? Why have you come thus by moonlight?
White Cloud, all of you, listen. I have found who it is that plots against the Comanche. There are evil men who scheme to take your land. Will you ride with me to trap them?
Yeah.
Then to your wigwams. Don your war paint. Take down your bows and arrows. Your shields made from the hide of the great buffalo. Take your fastest war ponies.
Quickly, the Comanche sped to their lodgings. War paint daubed each face. Bows were stripped of their deerskin sheaths. Arrows filled every quiver. And in a few moments, Straight Arrow was surrounded by 50 eager Comanche mounted on painted ponies.
We are ready, Straight Arrow.
Good. You all wear the red feather headband, the mark of the Comanche.
Straight Arrow, one moment.
Yes, White Cloud.
These evil men who pretend they are us, where shall we find them?
I do not yet know.
You do not know? But it is dark. How can you find them?
White Cloud, put your trust in me. We shall pick up the trail somewhere near El Camino.
But such a trail, can it be followed quickly?
We shall follow it quickly. But now there is much ground to cover. After me, up, Curry!
Out from the Indian village streamed the Comanches, moonlight glittering on the black braided hair, gleaming on the copper skins and polished bows, shining on the spotted ponies. Faster and faster they swept across the prairie toward El Camino, and at their head, his golden coat shimmering in the pale moonlight, the great Palomino Fury.
Monty, yonder's Carson's place.
Yeah. Got a lamp out on the porch, too. It looks like the judge and Carson sitting there. Gather around, gents, all of you.
Yeah, come on, boy.
Now, remember, you ain't white men, savvy. You're all Injun.
Sure, Monty. Didn't we stop to get all dressed up this way?
Yeah, war paint, bows and arrows, the work.
And remember this, gents. You can pull trigger if you want to, but make certain you shoot in the air. We got to keep that Judge Prentice alive, savvy? Make a big ruckus like Injuns. Yell and gallop their ponies, but that's all, savvy?
Yeah, all set then, Marty. What do we do first?
The corral, gents. It's just far enough from that porch that Prentice can make us out and think we're Injuns. Just far enough. Come on now. Walk your horses until I give the word. Then in we go and yell like blazes.
Cautiously, the bad men moved forward through the cottonwoods toward the Carson Corral. As they drew near, Monty raised his hand, ready to send his men forward like an Indian raiding party. But before he could give the signal...
What?
Whoa.
An arrow came hissing out of the darkness behind them, a golden arrow, and out of no place, charging down on the surprised outlaws, came a tide of painted Comanches with Straight Arrow leading the way.
What blazes? Swear it's Injuns.
Here, Monty, real Indians. They got us. They got us whipped off.
Not until all the bad men were captured, and Straight Arrow and the Comanches led them in silence up to the porch and stopped.
Ho, Curry, ho.
Well, I'll be. They're Indians, all of them.
No, Judge Prentice, not all. These men whose arms are tied and bound, they are not Indians. They are outlaws.
That ain't sure. We ain't...
Money! That was an idiot thing to do. Now the judge has us spotted for sure.
I have indeed. So this is what has been happening, eh? It was not the Comanche who are raiding innocent settlers.
No, Judge Prentice. It was these bad men. They hoped to get the Indian land for themselves to sell.
Never. Never, red man, I assure you. That land belongs to the Comanches, and it shall belong to them.
White Cloud, do you and your braves hear?
We hear, Straight Arrow. We hear, and we are grateful to our brother who rides the Golden Palomino.
Oh, ho there, Pinko. Straight Arrow, by cactus, you done it. I was watching from the cottonwoods. But how on Sasha...
How was I able to pick up your trail?
Yeah.
Look behind you, Packy.
Behind me? Well, I'll be a lop-eared mule. A trail of white stretching behind my horse.
White flour, my friend. That sack I put on paint was full of flour. I cut it open before I left you. In the moonlight, it was easy to follow. Judge Prentice.
Yes, Great Arrow?
These men shall go to jail.
They shall indeed, Red Man. They certainly shall. But do you know, even now I have difficulty in telling you real Indians from them.
Look for the red feather, Judge.
Huh? The red feather?
The mark of the Comanche. The red feather headband. Others may use war paint, bows and arrows to pretend they are Comanche. But only the Comanche himself, honest, fearless, and loyal to the land of his fathers. Only he wears the red feather headband of the Comanche.
This time of day, most of you Straight Arrow fans have pulled up reins, all set to take it easy for a while. But tomorrow morning, you'll be at it again, bright and early. So don't forget to have some Nabisco shredded wheat before you start out. Nabisco shredded wheat has what it takes to make you feel really ship-shape. Those crisp, whole wheat biscuits give you energy plus to help keep you going for hours. And you won't be feeling hungry way before lunchtime, for Nabisco shredded wheat is the kind of breakfast food that stays with you clear through to the next meal. Hot or cold, plain or piled with fruit, Nabisco shredded wheat makes the best breakfast ever. Tell Mother you'd like a big bowl full every day starting tomorrow.
Adventures of the Old West, ride with Straight Arrow. And remember, Nabisco, Nabisco is the name to know. For a breakfast you can't beat, try Nabisco shredded wheat.
Straight Arrow, one of many juvenile Western radio series which existed during radio's golden era. Of course, of all of those series, the best known is by far The Lone Ranger. That episode of Straight Arrow, titled Land of Our Fathers, a syndicated broadcast released in 1948. That does it for this hour of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Once again, if you want to get in touch, the email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com, and the website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. Again, this is show number 1623. Please join me again when you can, won't you, for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.